Welcome, everyone. We are currently in a climate crisis. From raging fires to rising seas, all the top scientists agree. Our current situation is untenable. The response from the financial services industry has been a rapidly growing subsection of the space, known as ESG investing. And to talk with us about this space today is two leading investors, Karen Cornelia-Tambor and John Heppner. Karen is a co-CIO of Sustainable Investments for Bridgewater Associates, the largest hedge fund in the world. And John is the head of U.S. Stewardship and Sustainable Investments, Legal and General Investment Management, a manager that manages over $1 trillion in assets. Karen, my first question will go to you. When you think about sustainable investments, what data are you using specifically to find these new and interesting investment ideas?
It's a great question, because I think that while investors are accustomed almost to the idea that when they regularly invest, there is a huge mess of data. And part of the job of an investor is to find out what's pertinent, sort through all that data, and make sense of it. That feels new in the sustainability space. And so there's almost a surprise that so many data sets don't match, give a different picture. But in our view, it's not any different than a question like, what is today's growth rate in China? If you look at it, you're going to find lots of data. It's going to clash. There are going to be different perspectives on that question, and you're going to have to find a way to handle big data, small data, messy data, clean data, triangulate, what have you. The same thing in the sustainability space. For us, it really starts with the question of, what are your goals? In other words, what are you trying to get out of the data? Don't think about what data is presented to you, but what concept are you actually trying to capture? Once you know clearly what the concept is you're trying to capture, what's really fantastic is that the ecosystem of providing data in the sustainability space is getting better and better each day. And so investors calling up data providers saying, this is the concept I'm trying to capture and here is why, is rapidly improving the options available to meet the needs of what investors want. And the other thing is, today, there's so many areas of investing where issues to do with social and environmental are just core to what's pertinent to the investment, that even investors who don't think of themselves as, I'm working on ESG, are finding themselves asking these questions and saying, well, if the thing that policymakers care about is transitioning to a green economy, I have got to understand that. If the thing that policymakers care about is tackling inequality, I guess I've got to understand that. And so more and more, you're just getting a response to that in terms of providing and creating the data available to answer that question. Just like when I gave the example on Chinese growth, I mean, for decades, people have created an ecosystem of how to measure growth around the world in the best possible way.
Gotcha. Thank you for that, Karen. John, a similar question to you. How does Legal & General think about data in the sustainability space?
Sure. I think first off, it's important to recognize there's a lot of confusion between data and ratings. And the ESG industry, myself included, hasn't made it any easier. So the acronym, Environmental Social Governance, is both a data idea. So what are your carbon emissions? What is the exact governance profile? But it's also analysis, right? So data is supposed to be a fact. It's supposed to say, hey, a director on a board has been in place for 10 years or 5 years. But then analysis is trying to put a judgment on that. Is that director still independent? So I think Karen really teed it up nicely that, you know, there's different needs for data. Certain data, you just want to factually understand what's happening. And then there's other data where you're trying to pull the analysis or evaluation from others. The big trend for us and the whole industry is to move everything in-house. So we're trying to create our own points of view and rely less on others. And I imagine it's similar for Karen. Everyone's trying, you know, the industry grew up so fast that we were using others, and now everyone's bringing that in-house. So that's the big trend. I will say there's also two different purposes. Karen mentioned that right up front. One of the purposes that we use ESG data for is to raise the standards across the entire board. So we are looking at things like women on boards and do you have supplier policies? And we're making that a piece of data that we expect every single solitary company to disclose. That's one purpose, because we want to see the market all rise. There's a different purpose where we're trying to find an investment advantage. We're trying to find value. So that in that type of analysis, we really try to look at a subset of ESG data that's really closely linked, hopefully, to finding mispricings in the market.
Gotcha, John. That makes a lot of sense. I wonder also broadly, when you think about what data sets to use, you often have to have conversations with clients about what goals they're trying to achieve in their portfolios. Karen, I'd love to get a sense of what the interaction is with clients when you're dealing with sustainable investments, because often people have different ideas of what they want out of E, S, and G.
Absolutely. And I do think that any investment manager should start with being as clear as possible about your goals. And so just saying, I want to make as much return as possible with as little risk as possible is sort of the standard financial goal I think that clients have. And in that context, more and more, there's just a lot of issues where environmental, social, and governance issues is actually just a pertinent part of making money in that market. So for example, if we're going and deciding whether or not we think the price of copper is going to go up or down, you really just can't do that analysis without looking at what's the pace going to be in which the world transitions away from carbon. You just have to ask that question as a way of determining what the future of carbon is. And so there's just a lot of areas where you look into the future, and that's what you do in an investor when you make an investment decision. And to do that, you have to think about environmental and social issues. And I'd say all clients are asking that. All clients are saying, you know, when you're making investment decisions, are you thinking about environmental and social and governance issues as they're pertinent to just making money in the markets? And then more and more, there's a transition to a set of clients that also say, you know, in addition to that, I also have sustainability goals, whether it's I want to contribute to the transition on carbon. So I care whether my portfolio is net zero, or looking at issues like I care about what the social policies are of the companies I'm investing in because I care about whether or not I'm making money off companies doing things that I don't think are okay. More and more, you have investors wanting to have sustainability mandates. It's just part of what they care about the world. Probably the strongest we hear this is from pension funds, because they're saying, what does it even mean to leave money for my pensioners if I'm leaving behind a world that's not the world they would like to have left behind for them and the people after them? And so once that goal is laid out, to us, that's a little bit of a game changer. Now investing is not two-dimensional risk and return. It's actually three-dimensional risk, return, and impact, or risk, return, and sustainability. And that third dimension deserves just as much care, attention, analysis, systemization, all the hard investment work you expect us to do in minimizing risk. We should now be thinking about maximizing impact.
And John, I know Legal & General's philosophy is going to be a little different because you have such a broad investor base and you have such a broad investing strategy. I'd love to get a sense of what the conversations are like with clients when you think about stewardship and your role at the firm.
I want to piggyback a bit on Karen's framework because I think it is helpful, right? So the baseline assumption for every investor is they want to make appropriate risk-adjusted returns. That is a given. There is this other component, which is, you know, they have some interest in improving the world. There's a motivation, right? And so most investors are some combination of those two, right? So either they're 100% make investment return with zero concept of how that could spill over society, or I actually do want to study the improve how my investment dollars could improve the world. And there is a range of actions. So once you start to unpack the motivations and really understand what the client's looking for, there, it turns out it's never that clear, right? So there's lots of different potential actions we could take. So very simply, the most simple known action is divestment. And that's kind of an overused concept. It's, hey, I'm not interested in any fossil fuels. I'm going to cut those fossil fuels out of my portfolio. That's the kind of the most classic and more, maybe somebody would say the most pure form. But it's become much more complex. There is now, we're a very major investor in almost all public companies. We're an index investor. So we have a little slice of every single public company in the market. Well, that actually, and actually that slice is big and it's growing. And that slice gives us access to those companies. So we can actually have constructive engagements with many of our portfolio companies to try to help them to perhaps navigate some of those risks we've identified. If there's a climate change risk, we're navigating. So that's corporate engagement. Then we can also use our proxy votes, which is a right of an equity holder. We could use the media and talk about what companies we think are doing well or not well. So there's a range of activities and they're becoming more and more used in the market and there's much more interest in the market.
Gotcha. Thank you for that, John. And I'm sure conversations with clients also have to include what's going on in the regulatory world. Sustainable investments is not necessarily a, you know, lifelong ambition or lifelong focus for the SEC. I know there's an ongoing SEC request for comment around this field. I'd love to get a sense of what conversations with clients and what conversations with regulators are like in the space. I guess particularly if there's policies you'd like to see pass or policies out there that you think will be replicated going forward.
Sure. So right now in the US, if you are participating in a 401k or a pension as part of your corporation, or let's say you're a school teacher, it is legally unclear whether they can have a sustainability fund in your lineup. There's a lot of debate on there, and that is a big problem. And we do believe that the DOL and the SEC, which are the groups that oversee how this is regulated, will sort this out. So hopefully that's the number one biggest overhang is it's unclear, because we think incorrect assumption was that pursuing ESG in the past were for non-financial benefits, where we believe most ESG analysis is done for financial benefits. So that was just kind of some sort of confusion in the market. So that's one set of policies that we hope will change. There's good signals from the SEC that that's going to change. There are lots of other policies that will help this entire space. So there is one right now open for comment for the SEC to enforce some sort of mandatory disclosure for climate risk for all companies. We will publicly comment. We hope the market leans into this. We think this is really, really important. You know, one of the anchors of the free market is that we all rely on available information. Information is out there for everyone. There's no asymmetry of information. For all of us on the inside, we know that that's not true, right? We can engage with companies. There's lots of different information. You can buy very expansive data that tells you which companies are performing better or worse on climate risk. We want to see that data in the market standardized and used more. So really excited to see where that goes.
Gotcha. And Karen, I know Bridgewater obviously operates internationally. I know there's a pretty major policy in Australia that I believe could be a template going forward for other countries to potentially follow, especially around the social aspect of it all.
It's really interesting how on the environmental side, I think there's sort of been a winner, which is measuring carbon looks like is going to be the winner. It's not the only way to look at environmental sustainability, but with so many governments signing up to have specific pledges around when they're going to go net zero and how, it's getting easier and easier to say, okay, everyone's going to have to measure their carbon. That's going to be the standard, and it will align to national policy and so on. On the social side, there hasn't been as clear of a winner of sort of what is good social policy. And we really feel like Australia has been a leader in having modern slavery as a new form of legislation. But they're basically taking an issue where I think almost any investor, if you say, you know, would you like to be profiting off of people's slavery? They would tell you pretty quickly, no, I do not want to be profiting off of people's slavery. That's a pretty easy one. Even if they're just thinking I'm a pure risk and return investor, it's pretty easy to say that's not something I want. But if you actually say, do you have any idea? Do you know if your investments are indirectly financing modern slavery? The answer usually is no, because, you know, as John was saying, we're all relying on a data ecosystem, and that's a very hard question to answer at this point. And so what Australia has done is basically put this into law, saying that you have to start answering that question. And we see that spurring all kinds of innovation in looking for data, trying to get the answers, trying to have alignment across different players to say, how do we know the answer to this question and how do we dig deeper? And we wouldn't be surprised if that gets copied and followed and becomes a standard that many people have because of the ease of sort of saying slavery is not the sort of thing I want to be profiting off of. But it remains to be seen. I think that space is kind of wide open for different regulators to say, here's what we think are the social things that we'd like to see measured in the same way carbon is measured, to be as a basic guide stick and a standard for everybody to know what's going into their investments.
And I guess almost combining the two answers here, and John, this is a question for you. What type of policies would you like to see, or I guess what type of data would you like to see come from companies that would be standardized? Would it be carbon emissions that every public company would be required to report? Or, you know, I know there's already some diversity stats, but if there's wider ranging, you know, firm-wide diversity stats that could be reported. I'm wondering if there's any thought from you on what you'd like to see specifically from a standardization standpoint.
Yeah, it's a very hard question to answer in a short period of time. You know, there are emerging standards. I would point to a quite well-established group, which I'm part of, called Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, which has worked really hard at creating a backbone of ESG topics that are very reasonably material to companies. So that's an industry-specific approach. There are other groups that I'm also part of that I think take a top-down view. So there's another group called the Human Capital Management Coalition that is advocating for specific metrics that help understand your employees. And these are quite reasonable metrics, such as how many part-time, full-time gig workers do you have? Or what is the total cost of your workforce? What is the turnover of your workforce? So right now, as investors, we actually don't know turnover of the investments we're in on a standardized way. It's just an example of some of the metrics. There's a lot, though, in terms of what the SEC could do. There's a lot wide open to really move this forward.
I agree more with what you're saying. I think that some of the really interesting things happening are new standards. And the thing I would add is that there's basically like before the fact standards, the things you're looking at to say, I want to go make an investment. And there's been a lot more development in that space to say, I want to go make an investment. What should I know? What does this company do? How? What there has been less evolution on is sort of after the fact. I've bought a company and now I want to know after the fact, what impact did it have? Did it improve? Did it make a difference? And so we often look at the lens of the UN Sustainable Development Goals as a set of frameworks that, you know, governments around the world have agreed is what it would take to move the world to a more sustainable future. And then we look at that and basically say, well, can we tell after the fact, after we've owned an investment, what has happened, and report from that perspective? Instead of just doing financial reporting, you're also reporting on what has happened to your investment from an impact perspective. And there, it's really just very early and nascent to not give you just a point in time information to help you make an investment decision, but after the fact, tell you when, how, in time series form, what kind of impacts companies did. And so demand from investors to also be reporting on these issues, I think, will spur even more of a data ecosystem. I love some of the initiatives that you mentioned, John. I would add to it Harvard Business School's impact-weighted accounts as another really cool way of being able to say, if you had a company, how would you do its accounting if you actually considered its social and environmental costs? So for example, you could look at every company and say, if governments magically started actually taxing all the environmental damage that we're doing, would this still be a profitable company, or does it not really have a business model in a world where we tax its pollution?
That's a fascinating study. And I think a really good segue to this next and kind of final topic I want to touch on, which is accountability. I think specifically, we see so many investors now pitching themselves as sustainability investors or ESG focused. I want to figure out, how do your investors hold you accountable to those standards? I know that there's so many metrics out there, but I'd love to get a sense of if there's a uniform way you've seen.
Sure. It's a really challenging problem because, you know, everyone, all investors, let's be really blunt, all investment managers see ESG and sustainable investing as a commercial opportunity. So everyone is crowded in. And so the question is, how do you tell one asset manager from another? Everyone says that they have the best sustainability credentials. And the hard answer is that you have to do your homework. So I think a very credible group is the Principles for Responsible Investing. They have a public rating on asset managers that I think is very rigorous. So that's one group that you could rely on. There are also these factual ways you can do it. So if every company, every asset manager says they're really engaging with companies and voting proxies in very thoughtful ways, pick five companies and see how all the different asset managers line up. And do they hold the company? Do they engage with them? And what do they see? But I do think this transparency is really hard. And I think our companies are, and asset managers, transparent on what they're doing. Right. So we spend a tremendous amount of resources trying to explain why we do what we do. And for companies, hey, what's important to us, so that we try to use our kind of radical transparency to show companies, you should never be surprised with your how we're assessing you on sustainability, because we're putting it in the public domain.
I'm glad you mentioned radical transparency. I've heard that a few times, listened to Bridgewater founder Ray Dalio speak in the past. Karen, I'd love to hear about when you interact with companies within a sustainability context, what is that conversation like? Is it holding them account via an activism sense? Is it being transparent about what you and your investors hope to accomplish and what they hope to accomplish? Or is it less active and more you guys pick out investments you know will act on your values and not really interacting with them much at all?
For us, our strength, and I really think every investment manager brings to bear whatever strengths they have in generally doing risk and return to the sustainability topic. For us, a big strength is definitely systemization. The fact that everything we're doing is not based on, you know, an analyst look very carefully on something, but it's a triangulated, systemized, give me any one of thousands of companies around the world and they can give you a standardized, systemized answer to what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, what's pertinent in their case and why. And so what that means is we can both answer very clearly, this is why a company is included in our sustainability portfolio. This is what we're seeing. Here's how we triangulated that answer. And this is what would cause a company that isn't included to be included. And we can use that as sort of a map to say, if we're engaging with a company, we can open up that map and say, here are the strengths, here are the weaknesses, here are the issues that need to be addressed. And so we feel like that's just a way of utilizing what is for us 40 years of taking any investment thoughts and finding a way to really truly systemize them and reflect our thinking such that it's scalable and can go to any security in the market, and just transferring that sort of strength into the sustainability space.
Gotcha. Karen and John, thank you so much today for your insights. If this panel has taught me anything, it's that we have some of the brightest minds working on this problem right now.